You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
That's what I call pro talk. When you really don't know the answer, you just make it up.
My rut is that I am in a rut.
To get the pilot of Red Arrow going.
This is really a way to skip class.
I want to say, hey, those boys right there are entertainers.
There you go. That's the nicest thing anybody's ever said on this podcast.
Alex Rutledge here with American Roots Outdoors TV.
Hey, this is Leanne Tiffany Lukowski from the Crest TV.
Hi, I'm Don Higgins.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
Hey, everybody, this is Mark Drury with Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Craig Fitz of Trained Assassins TV. You're listening to Dave and JP on Pro Talk Outdoors, the craziest two I know.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Pro Talk Outdoors. We are full on ready for bass fishing. You did some in Tennessee and absolutely set the world on fire.
I don't know if I set the world on fire, but I'm not much of a braggadocious type guy.
Well,
JP,
I did the bragging for you. That was me setting you up to talk about the fours and fives that you caught multiple of.
Well, it kind of goes back to the day before I left for Tennessee. You know, I went and just hit a local pond and caught a couple biggins. Couple big girls. They were they were up shallow and did some pitching with the old Barrett Sweet Beaver up there in the stick ups, and they were pretty shallow, and I hooked some pretty good ones there. And you know, then Savannah was kind enough to get a hold of me at the beginning of last week and said, hey, what are you doing this weekend? And I said, well, I don't know, you know, it's her weekend, you know, she didn't have the kids, and she had to go down to Tennessee, and she said, let's go fishing. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, so I was like, yeah, let's do that. So we went.
The pictures tell the story, man. You guys nailed it.
We absolutely did. I mean, I can't really take credit for anything that we did, just because we kind of bank fished a little bit around Old Hickory. Didn't do much good at all there. Then I thought, you know, I'm going to a strange lake that I've never been to before in Percy Priest Reservoir down there, just outside of it's outside of Nashville. I'm not sure what the actual town is that's closest to it there, but so I looked up and I thought, I want to see about a guide. And man, I met up with a super guide, just a great guy, Brian Carper, and actually talked to him. I think we should have him on a podcast sometime in the future. But Brian agreed to take us out there, and we went out Friday evening, and man, that guy knew his stuff. He knew every rock. Excuse me.
Oh, my God. You're getting choked up. You're awful emotional about this.
I know. He knew every rock pile and every stump in that lake. And, man, we wailed on him.
I'm going to need you to hold it together over there.
Well, I feel like I'm going to cough a lot here into the mic. But
well, I didn't have quite the same luck that you had. I wasn't able to get out until Saturday, and conditions got pretty tough. It was a cool morning, which I was 100% ready for, but the water temperature was about 47, and the look of it was about like chocolate milk. So I was fishing in 47-degree Nesquik. I had a much tougher day, but it was fun nonetheless, and we're transitioning here into this week, and we got a lot more warmer days coming, and I think this coming weekend is going to be a lot better in this area than what last weekend was. But, man, maybe I should have just gone to Tennessee.
Oh, man, I highly recommend going. I can't wait to go back down to Percy Priest and fish that again.
I
mean,
that
lake is phenomenal. Just unreal. We were throwing square-billed crankbaits in like a red craw color and just wailing on them. I mean, there was one point I caught the biggest fish. I'm not bragging again because I don't do that, but I caught the biggest fish. But, you know, Savannah, she had caught a couple of smaller fish, and she was out of the back of the boat, and I was in the front of the boat. Excuse me. But there was at one point there where I think she caught 5 fish and 7 casts.
That's pretty awesome.
And they weren't just, I mean, they weren't regular fish. I mean, one of them was almost 5. She caught a couple that were 3 in the 3 to 4 pound range. I mean, just big fat pigs, you know, just real healthy looking fish. And we just had a ball. Good time out there.
Man, I'm jealous, and I'm just counting the days to Saturday to when I can get back after it.
Yeah, bad thing is my thumb is still
shut
tore up. It's still sore.
I don't have time for this kind of crap. We're about to talk some turkey hunting, though. It's spring, and as much as you and I love bass fishing, we do love our turkey hunting as well. And we're saving a lot of those good topics for our guest, a guy that's a good buddy of the show here. We've had him on a couple times before, and glad to have him again, Mr. Craig Fitz. So we're going to toss it to a break and come back with him. Whether you're a field or a float, a good knife is a necessary tool to have at your disposal. Cavemen couldn't go without it, and you shouldn't either. If you're looking for a lifetime guaranteed American-made knife that will hold up to next-level abuse, we've got just the thing for you. Big Tough American Knives bring more than a cool name to the table. They bring small-batch, handmade knives with a lifetime guarantee to outperform mass-produced competitors. And if you snag a field knife you love, give Josh and the BTAC team a shout-out about some of their kitchen or processing knives as well. Big Tough American Knives is the official blade of Pro Talk Outdoors. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Pro Talk Outdoors. JP and Dave live here talking to Craig Fitz. And, Craig, man, you've been on our show a couple times before, and we've talked a variety of different things, but you're right now, as we speak, in the woods putting out cameras for turkeys. Tell us why you love doing that and what you can gain from it that, you know, that a deer hunter wouldn't understand, or maybe they would 100%. Maybe it's the same strategy, but tell us about it.
Well, it's about just like deer hunting, where checking cameras and putting them up is just about as fun as it is hunting them. And so right now I'm on a new piece of property that I actually just picked up about 3 days ago, turkey hunt, and I think we done hit a jackpot, so I can't wait to put this camera up. I'm actually just putting it on a little opening right here at the end of the road, and hopefully they use it to strut and walk down. I've seen some tracks and stuff like that, so we're going to find out. Hopefully I get one puffed up a little bit when I come check it next time.
Are you in Louisiana right now? You down in your home state?
I am in Louisiana.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So you saying, Dave, JP, get your turkey tags, or is that what I heard?
We're going to get, as soon as I find some inventory on it, we'll let you know.
I hear you, buddy.
So tell me, obviously this is still March, and turkey seasons kick off at all different times of the year all across the country. I know it seems like the southern states kick off sooner, and I'm sure there's a lot of reasoning behind that. And we kind of got into the biology of it around this time last year. But I want to ask you, from a hunter's perspective and somebody who films his hunts and tells stories with it, what's your thoughts on all the different wide ranges of season dates?
Well, I tell you, that's a very good question, especially from where I am. So I hunt a lot in Mississippi and Louisiana because I'm pretty much on the border, and I live in Louisiana, but I mean, I'm 30 minutes from Mississippi, and Mississippi season starts on March 15th and has since I can remember. And Louisiana season always started a week after, or 2 weeks, I can't remember now, from the Mississippi season. Well, last year, Louisiana made a decision to move it back even further. And now we do not open until the first weekend of April. So this year will be April 6th, which is about 3 weeks behind from where we usually opened. And a lot of people were upset about it last year. A lot of people understood it. They had a lot of mixed emotions across the state of what was good and what was bad. Well, I don't know if it had to do with that happening and then pushing that season back. And the reason behind it was to try to get those the gobblers and time to breathe the hens that may not be able to because the season was opening too soon, right during, you know, peak mating season. So a lot of them got killed before they even got to breed. Well, like I said, I don't know if it 100% goes to it being pushed back last year, but the population this year of, you know, young poults and jakes and things like that are way above than what it usually is in this state. So, and I don't know if it, like I said, I don't know if it was perfect climate last year or, and that was a combination, but something worked. So, at first I was not for it. And now I think they've changed my mind. I kind of like it.
Well, I love that you brought that up and mentioned the dates changing and the benefit to the next year's crop of poults. Because that's something we deal with in Indiana here. We have a very late season. I mean, it comes in
April 24th this
year.
Yeah,
it's like the last Wednesday of April every year. And it struggles every year. It's a struggle every year for hunters because I see guys all the time posting on social media like, man, our season's a month too late. And, yeah, probably for the most, you know, action as far as getting toms to come in and just beat the heck out of decoys and stuff like that, yeah, it probably is. But what it does do is allow us to have a good crop of poults every year, you know, taking the predator factor out of that. So,
yep.
You know, the later the season, yeah, it's kind of a pain, and the birds are doing something different every year than what other guys in other states get to do. But they still get out there and act a little silly sometimes.
Yeah, well, to put in perspective, you know, in Mississippi, it's been open 2 weeks now, 3 weeks if you include youth season, and they have a lot better population than we do in Louisiana already. But let's just put in perspective, in 3 weeks, it's been over 4,000 birds checked in. So,
wow.
Yeah, so if you know, Louisiana's not too far behind that whenever you open the season up. So that's 4,000 something birds that didn't have a chance to breed. Or in Mississippi, they may have. I'm just saying that's in Louisiana, it may have been 2,000 of them that, you know, got to breed, and therefore, so that helps, you know, if you do that year after year.
So let me ask you this, and this may be an out-of-the-box thought and too much into it, but what if you alternated every other year, kind of shifting those dates a little bit?
You'd be having all kinds of poachers out there, accidental poachers.
Yeah, yeah, people can barely keep up now.
Yeah.
Okay, well, fair enough. That's.
I mean, I like that idea, because I was thinking the same thing whenever Craig was talking about moving the season back for that year.
It just felt like a natural thought, you know, just for the conservation aspect of it, if you could do that. Mm-hmm. But I see your point, you know, folks having a hard time keeping track.
Yeah, and then last year, you know, when it was the first year they did, and everybody was like, well, they're going to be gobbled out and everything. They weren't. It was just fine. There was no problem, if not even better, because I know, like, in Mississippi this year, some people had great hunts, so I'm not going to say for everybody, but for us, I mean, we hardly had any gobbling, anything. They just weren't doing it yet. So I feel like, you know, it may have been too early, you know, before Louisiana season.
So what's your strategy when it's early season, you know, as in late March kind of area, versus a season that comes in April to mid-April?
As far as, like, how to hunt them?
Yeah. I mean, how do you hunt them?
I hunt the same way. There's no difference because, if I was up north, and which I don't bow hunt turkeys, but if I did, like in Nebraska, I know their season comes in pretty soon here, and all the birds are grouped
today,
up basically.
Actually,
you know,
came in today.
Today,
yeah.
There'll be, 40 to 60 to 100 in a group. Well, I've never actually had to hunt like that, but because here, I mean, even if it's early, I mean, you're only worried about five turkeys at a time, you know, maybe. That's good. I hunt them the exact same way every time. I go listen for them, hear them gobble, try to get in close, and start the day off like that. And then usually, you know, you're going to have a two-hour break where they're not seeing anything, and then they'll pick back up at 10 or 11 o'clock. So that's basically how we hunt them, and that's how we hunt them no matter where we are, no matter what time of year. That's just what we do. And basically, if they're not gobbling, then we're pretty much, for lack of a better term, screwed for it. So, because that's how we hunt them. Now, every now and then, we'll go sit in a plot where we know they're frequenting, but that doesn't happen very often.
So you're definitely a runner and gunner from the sound of it.
I mean, I would say 95% of the time that's what I'm doing. But the only time I don't do that is if my 6-year-old's with me, which lately has been a lot. So
what about decoying strategy? Do you change that up ever?
Yeah, so in our early season, I like to use a Jake or a hen, or a Jake and a hen, because at that time, you know, they're still trying to establish dominance pretty heavy.
Now,
so
your early season, what frame are you talking here? Because that's kind of what I'm getting at, is early season.
Yeah, that early season where they're still trying to establish dominance, which is about right now.
Kind of pre-breeding more so, right?
Yeah, pre-breeding, yeah. And some of them are breeding. I mean, there's hens already going to nest, you know what I mean, here, and that's very common. But they're still doing dominance right now. And so Jake decoys work pretty good typically in the past. This year, not so much, because there are so many Jakes, to be honest with you. The longbeards are coming around very, very slow. I mean, we caught in 30 different Jakes first weekend of the season. I mean, it's been crazy. So therefore, the Jakes are actually running the longbeards off. One morning, Slade and myself went hunting, and had a bunch of them gobbling and Longbeard coming to plot right off the bat. We were like, finally, no Jakes. Well, then here comes three Jakes, ran them off. And then we used the strut decoy to scare the Jakes off. And then we called in six more in the same exact spot. So it's just been one of them. I call it the year of the Jakes.
Well, you know what that means for next year then.
It's going to be a lot of two-year-olds flopping.
Be a whole lot of fun next year.
Yes, it's going to be great.
Oh, shoot.
So what about Mississippi and Louisiana? Mm-hmm. Are those all-day hunts down there? Are they noon cutoffs?
Nah.
What are they?
Yeah, you can hunt them all day, but our evening hunts are not near as good as in the Midwest and the North, where we'll go obviously later in the season, and where you can actually do pretty good in the evenings. Here, if you get one gobbling past noon, he's pretty much dead. But that don't happen very often.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of the midday or the afternoon hunt, around mm-hmm. Around Indiana is pretty darn good because birds get pretty lonely. I mean, it's kind of funny because, we're really on the – at the beginning of our season, they're usually either henned up pretty good or on the post-breeding cycle, really. And then, if you don't kill a bird off a fly down, you're pretty much done till around 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
that's
pretty much how it is here, except the problem is – ours never fire really back up like up there. We'll go to Missouri and Kansas and all that. I mean, like you said, 11, 12, 3 o'clock here, I mean, it's dynamite,
Yeah,
but
you can get them fired up.
Man, if you do get one here, you might as well just sit down where you are. He's coming. But that doesn't happen very often.
So how many different states are you going to be hunting in this year?
This year I'm slacking off big time. My son's really into it now. He's 6. He loves it, and so I'm staying at Louisiana, Mississippi mostly. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to go to Texas this past weekend, and had some issues come up that we had to cancel, so it was supposed to be me and him. So I'll probably make one trip with him to Nebraska. I'll go to Missouri to the Kingdom to hunt there, and then pretty much other than that, I'm at home.
Okay.
Well, so that's not bad.
Usually I go a lot more, but not this year.
So overall,
I'm coaching his t-ball team too, so that's hard.
Oh, well, good for you. Well, overall, though, I mean, what's your best state for your style, for the way you like to hunt? Where do you think your skills are most catered to?
Nebraska.
And why is that?
Open territory, and you can use decoys.
Okay.
And there's a lot of birds, and you can kill three, and you can kill all in one day. I love Nebraska turkey hunting.
I'm with you, man. I went to Nebraska last spring. I love it.
That's my favorite state to hunt by far.
You're in the eastern part, aren't you?
I'm in southwest.
Oh, you're in southwest Nebraska.
Southwest
okay.
Nebraska. Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, I hunted up around Chadron up there around northwest Nebraska.
Yeah, I hunt in southwest, and then I kind of hunt we'll go 1 or 2 days up. I guess it would be more central west, which is a little bit more because where I hunt is kind of a hybrid between Rio and Marion.
Yeah.
Every now and then you'll go out in the field and there'll be a bleached white tip strutting right next to a cream. I mean, it happens all the time. And then we'll go about an hour and a half north of where that is, and all of them are bleached white.
Yeah.
So, okay.
But I like them because they gobble a lot. They come in. They love decoys. And, me, I can call okay, but I'm not the greatest caller in the world, so I like that. I love that.
And I don't know. Sorry, JP. You got a thought? I know, but I was just thinking. I don't remember, Craig, if this is something we talked about on the podcast or if it's something you and I talked about off the podcast or whatever. But I know before I went to Nebraska last year, I was talking with you about it a little bit, and you said something about. I don't want to use the word dumb, but those turkeys out there are kind of dumb.
Yeah. they're a lot dumber than the ones here.
You are not kidding. I literally. I literally shot my first bird out there, and I was bow hunting because it was the opening weekend archery there, and
it's good there. I mean,
oh my gosh, man! Yeah, 80 to 100 birds in a flock at a time, but I shot my bird. shot my bird, and he kind of limped off there, and I went after him on foot. And anytime you do something in the Midwest after turkey, if you. They can be 400 yards away, and you move, they're going to take off and be gone.
Yep.
these birds were still, I'm talking 100 yards away from me, still strutting and gobbling and carrying on while I'm out there wrestling this other bird down. It was just unreal. I couldn't believe that, the stuff you can get away with over there.
Absolutely. It's crazy, and I completely agree with you. But that's why I like it. That's why I love it.
And this is the perfect – you guys didn't get off topic from my thought. My question was going to be something like this: if the bird is a bit more cooperative instead of dumb, we'll use a better word here, that those birds are cooperative.
I like that, JP. I like it.
I'm a wordsmith every once in a while.
Yeah, I'll use it.
But if they're more cooperative like that, does that cater more to taking a new hunter out? You know, let's say somebody, Joe Blow, lives in a metropolitan area and there's no turkey anywhere that he knows of, and his buddy's a big hunter and wants him to experience it for the first time. You know, should he take him somewhere where there's Easterns, where there's Miriams, where there's Rios, Osceolas? You know,
Rios.
Okay, and tell me why then? Is it the same reason that they're just cooperative, or is
they're
it
very
just more fun?
Why do you think my son's two trips are going to be Texas and Nebraska?
Okay,
because that's exactly the reason. It's because the more cooperative a bird is, the easier it is, especially for a new hunter. He's not going to be bored. He's going to like it, and once he experiences that one time, that's all he needs, because he knows what the end result is. You know what you're going for when you're in tough states like Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and states like that where it is tough, you know. And you don't get me wrong, you can go out like the other morning. We went, my son and I, and a landowner that I hunt on, and we killed so quick that when I took a picture of it, I mean, the flash came on. I mean, it was quick. I mean, but that's not typical here, you know. But you can get them like that. You can wake up one morning and he's as dumb as a pile of rocks and he comes running right to you, and then the same bird 2 days before that, you know, you could have called and he went the other way. You know, it's just it's just a little bit better chance up there, and I think it's because of population. Rios are a little bit they're a little bit better off as far as making it in the wild, I guess you would call it, and a little tougher, so their population is a little bit better. Obviously, if they live in Texas, they got to be tough. So
for a guy like you that's filming all this and telling great stories while doing it, is there ever an element where you want to step up and or make it harder for yourself or try something new, whether that's, you know, creeping up on one and reaping it, getting the bow out? I mean, what's your
No,
you just straight up just in it for the fun.
It's a lot of fun to smash them in the head with a 12 gauge.
I always said that turkeys are meant to be shot with BBs in the face.
Okay.
I feel that too.
Don't get cute with it, he says.
You know, I shot my first long beard with a bow last year, and I got to tell you, man, it just doesn't feel the same. I mean, it's a good accomplishment. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I feel good about the accomplishment, but I felt a whole lot better about shooting one in the head with a 12-gauge, you know, after that. It felt better.
The way I describe it is, don't get me the wrong way. People that shoot with bows, hey, more power to you. I love it. Like, you know, go have fun, because that's what gets you going. I love it. What gets me going is shooting them in the face, like Dave was just saying. And to me, it's like, I've been on a hunt where people shot them with bows. It's never a closure where the gun's like, boom, it's the hunt's done. It's like, okay, there's your closure. With the bow, it's like, and the bird flops off. You don't know if he did. Like Dave was talking about having to chase him and get it down. To me, I do enough of that during deer season. I don't need any more heart attacks during turkey season.
Oh, fair enough, man. You know, that make a lot
and
of
as far
points.
As like a challenge, I'll even tell you even further saying no on that, because if I go to a place and somebody says, hey, this such and such bird name, we call him Harry. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. He's always in this field down here. I said, well, look, y'all can go hunt him. I want the dumbest 2-year-old you got. I don't want one with a nickname. Because if you got one with a nickname, he's too hard to kill.
Hey, good point, man. Good point.
That's some grassroots way to look at it.
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, like I killed at least a 4-year-old bird in Indiana last year, and I'm tickled with it. And I got him mounted because he's such a big bird and best bird I probably ever killed. But man, I have just as much fun shooting a 2-year-old. They come and put on a show.
Kill a big one every now and then. Accidentally.
Yeah, it was complete accidental.
Accidental. Exactly. If he comes in there and he happens to have a big spear and he gets killed, if he comes in there and he's got a full fan with an 8-inch beard, he gets killed too.
Yep. They taste just as good, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yep.
So, Craig, let me ask you this then. We'll transition just a little bit more and stay along that vein of new hunters. How important do you think hunter recruitment is to turkey hunting specifically? We've spent some time and talked about that with deer hunting, but we haven't as much with turkey hunting. How vital is that?
Well, it's very vital, and the main reason is because of, especially in our area with the land itself changing so much, people cutting timber, hurting the population, and not necessarily cutting timber hurts population. What I'm saying is this thing's changing, the habitat changing, thing like that. If we don't get the young hunters involved, then nobody's going to be here for conservation later on to help that process. And I think that's one of the main reasons to keep young hunters in is basically to keep this sport alive, because this is a sport that is very niche, I guess you would call it. I mean, there's only, I think, 2.5 million turkey hunters in the nation, where there's 14 to 15 million deer hunters. So keeping this turkey hunting tradition alive is very important.
And man, I don't understand that. I really don't understand that, because
I should correct that, Dave, when you said you don't understand that. There's 2.5 million licensed turkey hunters.
Oh, there you go. there you go. So, yeah, there are probably a few more out there. But, no, I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me at all, because I would be hard-pressed. Now, don't get me wrong. There's nothing like killing a big deer, okay? And I'm always going to get excited over that. But there's a level of excitement I feel when I get out there and turkey hunt, and I hear one gobbling, and they come in, and they're spitting and drumming, and that's just something that I don't want to ever live without.
Well, the difference is it's an auditory experience.
Correct.
You're adding another sense to it. You know, because, I mean, unless you hear a couple bucks fighting, or, hear a grunt or something like that, for the most part, deer hunting is much less auditory. And I think that's the difference, is you're trying to appeal to all five senses. You've got the smell.
JP,
the sight,
making it scientific over here on us. That's awesome.
Well, I can give you an analogy to kind of the same way, and I say this all the time, and y'all both know that I used to be a narcotic agent, so I kind of made this analogy up on my own. But so deer hunting is kind of like a person that maybe smoking weed or something, where the high lasts a lot longer after you kill it, and it's a little bit more celebratory for a longer time. Well, then a turkey hunt is kind of like crack, where you get it done and you're done. It's finished. It makes sense. You're ready for another one, man. That's what I've always been told.
Oh, my God. Craig, come on. I'm a crackhead. I didn't even know it.
Hey, that's exactly what I call a turkey crackhead.
We're crackheads today.
Oh, my God,
well,
man.
Well, hey, look, I'm serious. I say it all the time, and it's so funny. I mean, obviously, that's what I hear whenever, I used to be on a kind of occasion, is that, it only lasts so long, I'm always looking for the next one. I say, well, hell, that's like turkey hunting.
Oh,
you know,
my God,
maybe
man.
That's a new thing. You may have just stumbled on something, a new drug outreach program. Yes. Take these guys turkey hunting instead of the methadone clinic.
But man, could you imagine the poachers we'd have out there?
See, there wouldn't be a bird left.
There wouldn't be a season. They'd be out hunting in July and August.
They'd probably be over at Tyson Foods.
Oh, my gosh, man. I love that, Craig. That's a good one.
We've had a lot of analogies on this show, and I don't think one has taken a turn quite like that one did.
There you go, son. You got me for it.
But we've never been talking about crack and smoking weed.
Do y'all get trophies at the end of the year?
Oh, man. Maybe we should. I don't think you're going to be getting a participation trophy. You're in the front running for that.
Mom and Dad told me participation trophies don't count, so I'm glad.
That's a fact, buddy.
Well, man, before we let you go, tell us about what to expect on the show this season and anything new that folks can keep an eye out on.
Yeah, so the main thing that's new, we didn't really make an announcement on this, but Blake, one of our main hosts, he is no longer part of it. Not anything bad at all. All good. We're still best friends. We talk every day. It's just he wants to spend more time with his family and everything, so you will not see the main assassin of the year that always wins that title. He will not be on there. But fortunately, we took up some of his slack, we got a lot of stuff accomplished. So it was really good. Two of the things that were really excited was Slade and I both drew an Iowa this past year, and we both tagged out, and Slade tagged out in 2 days on a 170 plus inch deer, because he's lucky. and it took me 8 days or something like that, and I the king of 8 points. I killed another 140-inch 8 point, which is great for me.
It's the best frame in the world, I think.
Even though I told myself when I went to Iowa, I said I will not kill another 140-inch 8 point, and I could not pass it up, couldn't do it. When it walked by me, I said, well, I like them too much.
That's so, my favorite frame, man. I'm with you.
Yeah, I love it, man. But Slade killed the giant the second day there, so it was a really good
one.
That
was a beast that he killed, man. Whew.
He sent me a text when he killed it, when he shot it, and he said, man, I think it might be 170. And he sent me a video of the phone, and I said, man, I don't think that's 170. And I walked up on it and said, oh, wow, that video did not do any justice to me.
Well, Craig, what's the best places for folks to catch up and watch those?
It's going to be on Sportsman Channel starting in July, our season 7, which is crazy that it's that far. And our main airing is Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Awesome. What about social media? You specifically?
Social media, Facebook, Trained Assassins TV, and then on Instagram, exact same handle, Trained Assassins TV.
What about you? What if they just want more Craig?
CF_TrainedAssassinsTV on Instagram.
There we go. Well, man, it's been a pleasure as always. Hang with us through the break. You're listening to Pro Talk Outdoors. And, man, that was fun. You know, and announcing the knife sponsorship, that's pretty cool. We've officially got the commercial in there, the live read. So really, really glad to join on with those guys.
I don't think – yeah, absolutely. I'm excited about that, you know, because a quality knife is something that you don't really miss it until you realize that you don't have it. And,
right.
And what I mean by that kind of sounds weird, but, you know, if you're, if you're cutting up some wild game or, you know, if you got some knife work to do, you know, all of a sudden that cheapo knife that you got from Walmart or wherever just doesn't cut it anymore. No pun intended. But
I've always thought, I mean, the most dangerous knife is a dull knife.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and if it gets dull quick and you got to do some sawing or put more pressure than what's safe, it makes me nervous.
I've seen a couple guys like Eric or Craig over in Kentucky this past year that got some blood going around there because of a knife that just got out of hand there, so it's a shame we didn't have big, tough American knives before.
But now we do. Even though we're not big, tough Americans, this will get us a little closer.
I'll tell you what we are. Crackheads.
we're Craigheads.
Craigheads. Well, you know.
That was a fun segment, and I really do like the analogy. I love giving analogies. One of my favorite ones.
Leave it up to Craig to come up with that one. Oh, my God.
One of my favorite ones in the workplace is, man, there's a lot of places to get a ham sandwich. And no, I don't work at Subway, but it feels like if you're in a commodity-based business, it really does apply. But for something like turkey hunting, you know, you've heard with fishing before, the tug is my drug. I get his comparison, you know, just, you know, as an outside observer kind of understanding what he was getting at there. He made a good point.
Yes, it's a good analogy. It really is. I mean, I never thought that I would, you know, associate drug use with the outdoors, but I kind of do now.
Well, hey, we have a new outreach system here. Instead of, you know, doing a 12-step process, take them on 12 turkey hunts and see if that does the trick.
I think that would, better yet, just get kids involved so they don't get into drugs.
There you go.
You know, that's the thing.
There you go. Well, hey, it was fun with Craig Fitz of Trained Assassins. And, man, hey, hit us up on Instagram, social media of any kind, whether that's Facebook or Twitter. Shoot us an email, text message if you have our number. Whatever, man. Reach out to us. Get involved.
Yeah, do that. And, folks, make sure you're getting your Maximizer Mineral out there right now. It's a good time to get that program going. Most of the bucks have shed already, which down in Tennessee, I saw a couple still holding their antlers there, which a little bit surprising to me this late in the year. But, hey, they're going to be dropping the last of those antlers here really soon and starting to grow anew. And, you know, for the does and the lactation for the fawns, need that Maximizer Mineral out there. Get it in the ground, and it won't be long till we be food plotting again, man. We've already got our frost seeding done with the clover.
Which I'm looking forward to turkey hunting over my frost-seeded clover. I went over top of a deadly dozen plot, and I have some really, really good confidence in what that's going to look like here in just a couple weeks.
That's a couple years that we've done that. We went through and we had like a deadly dozen out, and then following the Deadly Dozen, you go in your frost seed clover. And I was amazed. That's what we did in Kentucky this past year.
How effective it really is.
Oh, my gosh. It's a great way. You get rid of all the weed competition because you planted your Deadly Dozen.
And everything's eaten up.
Yeah,
it's not like there's stuff hanging out in
essentially
there.
Essentially, the deer eat everything down to the dirt, so it's great for frost seeding. And then you got your clover coming back. And really, it's low maintenance. I mean, you mow it, and maybe if you got bad weed competition, you go through and have to spray, but we didn't even spray in Kentucky last year. We just mowed it probably four or five times and nice and thick.
Yeah, and you time that mow maybe a week before your turkey season comes in, get fresh growth coming in. I think it's going to be dynamite, and I'm looking forward to laying some more footage down. Get Innistrut Season 2 filmed.
Yeah, I tell you what, in Innistrut Season 1, I guess Episode 1, Part 1 for Nebraska. By the time that you hear this, it's probably out there. So, go to our Facebook page, check that out. I don't know if it'll be
YouTube.
Up on Carbon TV so soon, but YouTube. Check out, Season 1 of Innistrut. Got 6 episodes or so coming your way. Should be pretty entertaining.
Until next time, hook 'em or hunt 'em. Pro Talk Outdoors.
Later, guys.